from the World War II times when health insurance was first started in the US, I think there's just no accountability in terms of keeping prices in check. Now we have this massive conglomerate industry that's setting these prices without any type of transparency and no accountability.
A full 50% of Americans carry medical debt, according to a 2021 report by Debt.com. With numbers like that, it's no wonder why universal healthcare coverage is such a popular proposal with American voters. But why is healthcare in the US so expensive compared to other countries? And what can we do to bring down those costs without compromising on quality? Today, we sit down with Will Bruhn, the co-founder and COO at Global Appropriateness Measures, to discuss one simple change that could save Americans millions. Will, thanks so much for joining me.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So first off, I want to get something clear for some people. I think the medical system in general is very opaque to a lot of people, especially the billing side of it. So can you explain briefly how medical billing works and how we got into the situation where we're being charged extraordinary prices for very generic services? So for example, I think you cited in your PragerU video, some hospitals have been known to charge up to $100 for one generic aspirin. How did we get there?
Yeah, it's a great question and something I think a lot of smart people are trying to understand and fix. And I think the way we got there is this long history of not holding our healthcare system accountable to what they were charging. You know, it's been this pretty slow progression now to where we are at with this pretty catastrophic level of costs on healthcare towards the American population. And so I think it's just been this stepwise, you know, from the World War II times when health insurance was first started in the US, I think there's just this been no accountability in terms of keeping prices in check. Now we have this massive conglomerate industry that's setting these prices without any type of transparency and no accountability.
Well, I understand there's also this situation where hospitals will bill to insurance companies knowing that they'll only get a fraction of what they bill. So can you explain how that works and why, you know, sometimes they'll even give a discount for people, a drastic discount if they pay in cash. Why is that?
Oftentimes what happens is knowing that the hospitals are going to be going to the negotiation table with the insurance companies each year to negotiate, you know, if you're a Blue Cross Blue member plan, you know, they make a negotiation with each hospital to say, hey, for each of our members, how much of a discount are you going to give of care to allow them to go to your hospital? And so knowing the hospitals, knowing that that conversation is going to happen, they end up inflating their prices excessively so that they can technically offer a larger discount to their members. So oftentimes, you know, a hospital will come to one of the large insurers and say, hey, we've increased your discount for your patients from 35 to 40% this year with your insurance plan. But in reality, if you look on the back end, a lot of those hospitals are actually increasing the cost of that care by 10 or 15%. And so really at the end of the day, to the patient, they're getting no discount at all. And so that's oftentimes what's happening in the background and why, you know, if you see an itemized bill of what something costs before insurance deductions, it's just massively inflated. We call those the charge master prices in healthcare.
Now, you talked about this in your PragerU video that concealed prices is a major driver of increased prices. Why do concealed prices lead to increased costs?
Well, as with any industry, you know, you need competition to be able to drive down prices. You know, if the car manufacturing industry and the car sales industry didn't have their sticker prices on their cars, you know, they could go out there and charge whatever they want, knowing that you're going to have no way to shop around. And so I think you're seeing that these massive corporations within healthcare, the hospital systems, the insurance companies, understand that they have this cloak over the prices that the actual consumers, us, the patients, don't have access to. And so knowing that, they're able to charge really whatever they want. You know, so I've seen some crazy, crazy itemized bills, like you alluded to earlier, where, you know, a patient might get a couple doses of aspirin. You can get 90 tablets of aspirin at CVS for, you know, $5. But sometimes the hospitals will take advantage of the fact that the prices are hidden, and they'll charge, you know, $100, $200, $300 for that aspirin. And so that's what's happening here is without transparency, you're going to get these prices inflated because no one can do anything about it.
Now, why are medical purchases different from other kinds of purchases? So, for example, other businesses, if they were charging 10 times as much as their neighboring business, they would go out of business because people would shop around and they would go with the better price. But that's not happening in hospitals. Why are healthcare settings sort of unique in that way that they have this model?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, there's two layers of healthcare services that we can talk about. One is shoppable services, and those are the areas that transparency can have major effects on. You know, these are the MRIs, the CT scans, the common blood work you need to do in a non-urgent, non-emergent setting. And then there's also the emergent setting stuff. You know, that you get in a car crash and you're getting rushed to the ER. You know, as a healthcare provider, we have no idea what needs to be done for you to save your life, and so in those instances, it makes sense that we probably won't be able to really have a good estimate as to how much that care is going to cost. But there's this huge chunk, on estimate, about 60% of all healthcare services are elective, meaning you can shop around. You know, it's a colonoscopy that you need to get. You should be able to look up all the people in your city that do a colonoscopy and have it rated, kind of like Amazon, of who's the best and at the lowest price. And so that's what we're really trying to push for, is that that area of medicine that is shoppable. We're hoping to encourage those industries to start posting their prices so that competition can take place.
Are there hospitals that are doing that? I mean, I would imagine that some hospitals would jump on that opportunity to do low-cost colonoscopies or other types of radiology or what have you. Do we see that as a trend, or is there an incentive for them not to do that?
Yeah, I think we're living in a really exciting time with this topic, because there are groups all around the nation that are picking up this idea of transparency. You know, here in I'm actually in Oklahoma City right now, and there's a group here called Oklahoma Surgery Center, and they've gone totally transparent with their prices. You go on their website, you click on what body part you need to get surgery on, it lists what surgeries they have, and then it gives you an exact cash price as to how much that surgery is going to cost you. And now we're seeing that go into, you know, plastic surgery. We're seeing that in primary care now with direct primary care. They post just a monthly expense to be a part of their clinic, no hidden fees, no hidden costs. And so we're starting to see these different industries really pick up this idea of transparency. And I think the next 10 years are going to be really, really exciting for this stuff.
So one study that you mentioned in your PragerU video is that 1 in 5 Americans are in collections over medical debt. I'm not sure if that's still the case. You can let me know. But it's not surprising that the idea of free universal health care would be very appealing to a population that has that problem that's so pervasive. So is socialized medicine a viable alternative to our current system? What are your opinions on that?
Yeah, it's a good question and such a hot topic right now. I would say I think of going to a one-payer system as sort of a short-term fix for a long-term problem. I think I understand why people want it. I understand why people are frustrated and just want to say, go, you know, let's just screw the whole system. Let's start something new. I understand those pains. I think the problem that you get into there is when you look at the economics of the one-payer system, especially with, you know, Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rates to hospitals, it just doesn't work. I think the biggest risk you run into with a one-payer system is these smaller hospitals around the country that are in rural areas, which are already very underserved, run the risk of shutting their doors, because the groups that are actually keeping those places alive are the private insurance companies that pay much higher rates for their services. And so I think, you know, I think it's a reasonable thing that people want, but I think when you dig into the details a little bit, it really causes some long-term problems for the healthcare system, especially the disadvantaged populations like in rural areas.
Now, are there any countries out there that have both cutting-edge medical technology and affordable prices? And if so, what are they doing to achieve that?
Yeah, there's certainly examples across Europe that you see that are doing things really well. You know, Sweden and Norway are doing things really well. I like to always, because those are always the arguments for the one-payer system, is, you know, look at the European countries that are doing it. And, you know, my argument back usually is that, you know, we're dealing with completely different populations between the U.S. and those people. You know, it's like our rates of chronic disease, diabetes, you know, our cost per patient in our country is so much higher than those other countries, just due to the burden of chronic disease here. And so therefore, your bill for the healthcare services as a whole is so significantly higher. On top of that, you look at countries like Canada and the U.K., And, you know, certainly a lot of the population is happy to have, quote unquote, free healthcare. But, you know, you look a little bit deeper as well, and, you know, it takes sometimes 9 to 12 months to get into a specialist that's in non-emergent situation. And so there's always going to be pros and cons with this kind of stuff. And, you know, I think the U.S. is in a unique position to trying to figure out what to do with our population and our healthcare system.
So I believe it was in maybe the Wall Street Journal a few years ago, there was an article about how Americans would ruin any healthcare system in the world currently existing because of the unique culture that Americans have around healthcare. So I didn't mention this before. I was previously an emergency room nurse. So I have a fair amount of experience with how Americans approach healthcare. And I think what's interesting here is we have a balance of people are very aggressive about wanting the next and best thing. They want all the tests. They want to make sure they are very aggressive with finding out whatever's going wrong and treat, treat, treat. But simultaneously, we also have a non-compliance issue of, you know, people like to consult with WebMD and maybe argue about it with their doctor. And so the consumer model is challenging, but I think we have that sort of baked in problem with our population. So we need to tailor a system that's going to work with our current culture, because it's really hard to undo a whole culture. It's easier to make a solution that fits with that culture.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So what would the US system look like if we embraced price transparency? What would change in the hospital settings?
Yeah, I think what you are beginning to see the early stages of is these private companies step up and take on the role of, you know, what essentially what Amazon has done in the consumer market, which is, you know, you have companies like Turquoise Health, Sesame Care popping up that are taking in, you know, in January of 2021, the price transparency rule went into effect, which essentially meant every hospital in the U.S. was now federally mandated to post in a machine-readable format all of their prices and services of their hospital. And so what's happened now is you've got these companies that have come in and said, okay, we'll analyze all that data and we'll make a beautiful little dashboard that shows where the best and cheapest services in your part of the country are. And so I think as those technologies and as those companies expand, you're going to see more and more competition within that 60% of shoppable healthcare services. And I think the hope there is that as competition increases, prices decrease. That's what happens with, you know, most markets that have a healthy dose of competition. So my hope is that over the next 10 to 20 years, we're going to see some of these services like a colonoscopy dramatically decrease in cost, MRI, CT scans, common blood work, other elective procedures, you know, hernia repairs and so forth, that are going to really decrease the cost and therefore decrease the overall burden of healthcare costs on the average American.
So what you just described, though, is that a mandate that hospitals would have to follow to post their prices. So you're suggesting government intervention to promote a more market type healthcare. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think you need some level of government intervention on this. You know, the hospital healthcare system in general is too powerful and too big for the private market to take them on themselves or some advocacy group. And so I think you do need some level of federal mandates, which a couple of years ago, that was one of the last things that Trump had done in office was to sign that price transparency bill, which went into effect last January of 21. And so now you're starting to see the ripple effect of that with these companies popping up. And I have a lot of hope that that bill is going to spur on a lot of cool innovation.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to talk with you.
And where can people find you online if they want to follow your work or learn more about this?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Will Bruhn, B-R-U-H-N. That's mostly it. And feel free to reach out on our website as well, gamezures.com.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thanks so much.
All right, folks. That was the end of today's Office Hours. Until next week, I'm Georgia Howe, and thanks for tuning in.